Hello and welcome to episode number 48 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I am Robert Rosenthal.
We're with you from our studio inside the Armory at the University of Illinois, inside the Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning. And coming up, Robert, so we're going to talk to Pat Embleton. He is the general manager of Illinois football, but he has been with Illinois football for going on 14 seasons. Remarkable that a man so integral to a program has stayed in one. I mean, it's one thing if the equipment manager stays for all those years. If,
yep.
If somebody, you know, whoever takes care of the locker rooms and facilities, they're not, mm-hmm. you know, maybe the executive assistant or whatever, but the guy who's in charge of assembling a roster, the guy who's in charge of recruiting and the portal and everything, he was not imported with Brett Bielema. He was here, and Brett Bielema said, "This guy's something."
Yep, hired here by Tim Beckman. So, yeah, it's very, very rare. Guys with his resume usually have six different schools by now, and he has got out of college, got a job at Illinois, stayed there 14 years.
Yeah, instead of six different schools, he has like six different head coaches.
That's right. That's right. Everything around him changed, and he stayed the same.
Yep. All right. We're also going to do our second mailbag. We got to some of your questions last episode. We'll do some more on this one. And we're going to do all that after we, of course, what, Robert?
I think we should light the eye.
Our guest on Light the Eye is Pat Embleton. He is the general manager of Fighting Illini football, a title that did not exist a few years ago, but now does for many teams across the country. But Pat is in his 14th season coming up here in the 2026 campaign on staff with the University of Illinois football team, and has maybe the most institutional knowledge as anybody in that building. Pat, welcome to Light the Eye, and thank you for spending some time here when I would assume is, even though it's May, it's a very busy time for you guys.
I appreciate you guys having me. This is awesome. I said first podcast, so let's see how we do. Might be the last one based on what you guys think, but
we'll grade you afterwards. We'll let you know.
I know general manager has an association with it for some people in their minds, at least at the professional level. But at the college level, how do you encapsulate what you do as a football general manager?
Yeah, that's a great question, Scott. It's different every building you look at, and I think that in our building specifically, it is not what I guess people assume that position is, where you're dealing a lot more with money stuff, and there is that aspect to it. However, you know, Coach B is our CEO, right, and everything runs through him, and then we have a bunch of just assistants that help surround the building and take care of what their job is. And so my job mainly is to oversee our personnel and recruiting team and roster management, player evaluation, player acquisition, and deal. Have my hands in. I think the word general manager, like you know a little general information about almost every area outside of coaching, because I don't do that piece of it. And that's where to me that kind of fits that bill more than anything, is generally know a lot about. And like you said, I am the townie of the bunch now.
That's right.
It's so as the GM, if this was the NFL, the head coach would likely be reporting to you, and you would also be assembling and almost dictating a roster. But it's what is that? It's a reverse almost. Is that
100%.
Fair?
Yeah. This is obviously Coach B's team, his program, and you know, the way you can look at it is just we're all assistants to help build this university and this program into what Coach B's vision is. And luckily we can provide that input to, see what we think is best, but by no means is Coach going to always listen to us. But for the most part, I mean, he's a great person and a great coach for a reason. And He's the smartest dude that I've been around in this game, that he hears everything and then makes the best decision for the team.
Okay, but 14 years ago was a couple of head coaches ago.
Yeah.
When a head coaching change came for the first time and the second time, can you take me back? Is there a moment where you go, well, looks like I'll be looking for a new job?
About every time that came through. So, you know, I got hired by Coach Beckman, who, you know, I owe a lot to being where I am today, because he gave an opportunity to a young 21-year-old guy fresh out of college, and came here in December of 2012. And we went through, you know, that change, which was crazy, but I believe it was a week before the season started, ultimately, when Coach got let go and Tim or Bill Cubitt was replaced. And because it was so close to the season, you know that we were okay for the fall season. But then you didn't know what it looked like until after that season. And Cubes got the interim tag removed about 20 minutes before the Northwestern game. I remember that, you know, sitting in the back row of the team meeting. And that's when our interim chancellor had, you know, removed that title. And it was awesome because you felt, all right, Coach Cubitt and I had a good relationship, so we were comfortable.
Stability, yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, I don't know if I should share it, but whatever. We're on a podcast for it. So I was at a bachelor party in March of 16 when Cubitt got let go. And we were in the middle of nowhere and had no service. And I remember telling my wife at the time, like, hey, don't call the house phone, like, unless it's an emergency. And Saturday morning at 10 a.m. and we're doing what you do at a bachelor party at 10 a.m. and playing right. Beer pong.
Uh-huh. You're playing beer pong, and you find out your boss is gone.
Yeah, I get a call, and I'm like, come on. Like, what are you doing? So she let me know and drove to 20 minutes to go get service on my cell and figured out at that point that, hey, we don't know where this is going to go, right?
Yeah.
So that transition was difficult just because of the unknown, and the unknown is hard for anybody. But had a chance to interview with Lovey and, you know, and got obviously retained, and going through that process was awesome. Just to, you get different aspects, different views. Anybody that works with a number of different coaches, you learn how to do things and how not to do things, I guess, ultimately, right? And then when Coach Smith got let go and Coach B came in, my wife was pregnant with our third kid, and we literally just moved into our house, and we were unpacking boxes. We were in there for about a week. I remember coming home being like, hold on, let's just wait until we
leave that box back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It was stressful. I mean, for sure. But you're in this profession. Everybody that's in this profession knows that you're hired to be fired at some point. And so you can't let that ever get in your way of wanting to accomplish dreams or goals or do your best. Because the moment you hesitate on stuff, that's a moment where mistakes show up constantly. And, you know, it's, what I say, are you scared? Or are you looking? You can't look over your shoulder all the time.
I want to go back to, like, I just want to trace through your roles, because you weren't hired as the GM, obviously, in 2013. You're coming straight out of college in Ohio, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's your first job in college football. What was your first job here? And then just take me through, like, what you went, you know, how you went from there to GM. I know you slowly worked your way into the recruiting department and then up to GM, but
yeah,
you know, what were the steps in there?
So when I graduated college, I coached at my alma mater for one season and had the coaching bug. I knew I wanted to coach. I knew I wanted to be in football, right? And I always wanted to be a head coach. That was my thought as I got done playing. I was like, I want to go be a head coach because I learned so much and I had such an impact. Like, I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for sports, football specifically. Mm-hmm. And just because it, you know, I think it's tremendous.
What was the name of the college again?
Ohio Wesleyan.
Ohio Wesleyan. That's right.
Okay. Yep. Battling Bishops. So,
Battling Bishops.
Oh, yeah.
Now I got something else to get. Keep going. Keep going.
And so from there, I got here in December of 12 and, was coming here to be a GA and was going to work on the offense side of the ball. So went through that spring semester applying to grad schools that I did not get into school here because there was different rules at that time. But my assumption was always going to be a graduate assistant, work myself up to being a head coach. And when I got the news that the third school or the third, you know, grad program on campus here didn't accept it, then I was like, all right, we got to pivot and figure out what's next. And so Coach Beckman at the time, then I got engaged early, and he had, you know, transitioned me into an operations and recruiting type role. And I fell in love with it and was in that. I don't even remember. I think the first title that I got was a director of student athlete development.
Mm-hmm.
All that meant was just I worked in recruiting. I worked with our kids off the field, a support staff position. Mm-hmm. And from there, it just transitioned to a director of recruiting, director of player personnel under Bill Cubitt, to director of recruiting under Coach Smith, to a long title under Coach B when I first got there, and then I think simplified it as the general manager title.
Okay, I'm noticing a trend here, so correct me if I'm wrong. You had some hopes, and then you had to, okay, this grad program, nope, this one, nope, this, I'm going to be a coaching, nope, now I'm going into this. And here's what you do, I'm imagining, is a lot of, we're going after player A, oh, nope, they're not coming now. We're going to go pivot to player B or C. But, oh, now A's back. I see you doing a lot of pivoting in your life and maybe having plans but not having to grasp tightly to them. Am I on the right track there?
Yes. I use the words adapt and adjust. I mean,
but that's been your life, not just your job description. It seems to be your life.
Yeah, it's been in that sense, I guess I've never looked at it like that. But, yes, you make the best of the situation or the opportunity that's given to you. And there's always, you know, I'm a believer, and it's just, there's things happen for a reason. Right. And I think the moment that you start like honing in on things or thinking so much about it is when you can drive yourself crazy. And so I just let it roll with the punches. But I knew once I got a taste of the ops side, of the recruiting side, that this would be the path. This could be a path for me, right? I think still wanted to coach originally, but I had enough fixed to where on game days, like I was still involved in football obligations all the way up until Coach B was here. I had, you know, I was in the box up until 2019 for all our games and recognizing defenses and communicating with coaches on headsets and all that stuff. So I had that football fix, which has helped me so much in the position I'm in today, because you're just more knowledgeable about football and what you call schemes and you know, when you're identifying players, like what fits best in certain schemes or against certain opponents in certain conferences. So, it all happens for a reason.
So in the building, are you the senior? I mean, Trent's not there anymore. Trent had been there for a long time as equipment. So is there anyone else? Like, you are the senior member of this entire staff, right?
It is. I have the most experience at Illinois. Yes.
Not as far as like yes.
Yep.
Some guys are a little bit older than you, but yeah. I mean, it's just so rare, right?
It is.
Like, you and I had a conversation, Camp Rentoul 2013. You're just some young GA kid. We're talking. I said something funny on Twitter, and you wanted to bring it up to me in person. Well, we're having that conversation. The odds of you sitting here and that are 1 in 500, 1 in 1,000. Like, sticking around, following that path, especially at one place for 14 years, is just not. It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? Like, it's bizarre, right? Does Coach B bring it up to you? I mean, everybody has to have on their resume 13 different spots in those 14 years. Yeah. And you have one spot.
Yeah. It's definitely rare nowadays, for sure. When I look back and reflect on it, it's really cool. I mean, it's awesome for my family more than anything, just because you move like. And I'm always nervous or scared that if there's an opportunity that moves the family from here, then you start that constant moving and constant changing lives and all that. And so to that sense, like, it is such a blessing to be here. And, I mean, people are going to say that, and people might think that, oh, you're on a podcast, you're going to say, it's like, this place is awesome. It really is. You know, I come from a small town east of Cleveland to – where it's more hilly and got more trees than where Central Illinois is, but like, it's such a cool community, and to be a part of that has been really. I mean, I got married here, I've had all my kids here. Like, it's, you'll never forget this part in my life, right? And so, at some point things will change. I hope that it doesn't, but if we do leave, like, this place is always going to be home, right? Because that is, my roots are here. We've started my life here. And it's so, to that part of being the longest person here, I don't necessarily know if I, like, there's certain moments that I reflect, you know, when we beat Michigan a couple years ago, like, looking at this, at the stands and seeing what it was to where we are now. I'm like, that gives me chills, right? That's fun. Yeah. That's reflecting. But I try not to reflect on it as much, just because it's, I don't want to get too emotional, I guess.
I know what you're saying. You know? Yeah. I mean, like, personally, you and I have had so many conversations over the years in different points, some where you almost felt bad for me, the Illini football fan, of like, you know, like, hey man, sorry we're 2-9 or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you felt like personally responsible for like my joy or whatever. So we've had these conversations, and then we've had these like, can you believe this moments of, you know, it's rare to have someone on a football staff. Again, I'm just a fan who has a blog kind of thing, but it's rare to have someone on a football staff who has seen the transition that you have seen, who has seen this place for a November Northwestern game where the number of people actually in the stands is probably less than 10,000 of, you know, actual attendance.
Yep.
And to see it, what it was like that day of the Michigan game you referenced. Yep. It's impossible to see a program from that point to that point, and you've ridden the entire thing. It's so rare.
Yeah, it's cool to that part. Like, when you reflect on it and look at it that way, it is neat. And you think back, like, what's different? Because people probably ask, obviously we have a really great head coach, right? And that's the first piece of it. But it's not like we worked any less or any harder now than we did with the other coaches. It's just a matter of who you have in charge and that vision. But then just the consistency, I think, more than anything, from all the staffs I've been on, like, the consistency that you have to perform high every single day, like, that's the expectation in this building. Mm-hmm. And it was from day one when Coach B got there. Not saying that it wasn't with the others, but it is, that's the demand, and that's what everybody in the building knows, right? And you don't want to be that weak link in the building that doesn't take care of your part or do your job, because it is, you people will find that weak link pretty fast, especially in, you know, in our building now.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally, it's such a rare thing to, you know, A, be as long as, at one place as long as you are, but B, to see the 67th best program in the country or whatever to a now top 25 program in the country to walk that transition. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'll stop talking about how great we are and let Scott ask some actual questions.
Well, I guess in short, I mean, I'm sure there's some complexity to it, but do you and your staff, are you kind of the filter when it comes to prospective players, either the transfer or the recruit, you know, out of high school? Are you the filter before it gets to the eyes of either position coaches, coordinators, or obviously Coach B?
Yes. I think you can think of it like that, right? Back in when Coach first started, we utilized, like, our recruiting staff did cultivate, find a lot of players, and they would pass on. You know, we have a database that you start a pipeline on a player. It goes to an area coach. Area coach goes to the position coach. Position coach goes to a coordinator. And coordinator, then it would go to the head coach. Well, we have kind of kept that same mold, but just do it a lot faster now. And I think that the relationship that and trust that Coach has within our personnel office allows us to really say, nowadays it's more, okay, these are the 10 players on defense that we think are the ones that fit us the best, fit this place the best. We've done our vetting on it. And at that point, it's usually, all right, we're going to go recruit these guys. So, you know, short model, that's how it is. But long term, like, or, you know, bigger picture, yeah, we filter 90% of the players that we're bringing in.
And I don't know if this question is answerable, and I'm certainly not looking for secrets, but do you have a hit rate Like, is there a hit rate in football if a recruiting staff looks at, I don't know, 1,000 players that somehow check a box of we might be, would love to see them in a uniform? Is there, or maybe it's 500, whatever that number. How many it could actually end up?
You remember a lot of the ones you miss on more than you hit on. But there's certain levels to missing, right? Is there a miss like he's not a good football player, he's not a good person? I think here when you miss on somebody, it is, all right, this dude's a locker room guy, this dude is a team builder. Like there's always going to be some quality that you find within a player that you hang your hat on, because at the end of the day, when you want to present or you want to stand on the table to bring a guy there, like that's on you. And so if a player doesn't perform athletically, then there's got to be something else that he's doing in order for you to say, okay, I felt good taking this one because he is the glue guy in that locker room, right? So is there a hit rate to it? Yes. I think it, like the general rule of thumb is you're going to miss on about 20% of the players you bring in, give or take, you know, a couple percentage points, I guess. But that is, you know, when you used to only be able to sign 25 players to a class, it was always, all right, I don't know, what's 20% of 25? Like, that's
not a math guy.
Does
someone have a calculator?
That's five.
Yeah. So you're going to go really, you know, three to seven players is they might not work out. Yeah. And that's okay.
Well, when you say they might not work out, you mean they made the roster and didn't work out in the way?
Athletically.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I see. I was saying more like we've interacted with or tried to bring in, I don't know what the number is.
Oh, from when you signed.
Yeah, like 100 guys came and visited last year, whatever the number is. And
it's a good yes.
Probably guys that they want to come, and then you decide no, and vice versa. But
We looked back at like our April, because last year, or I'm sorry, 2 Aprils ago was really our first cycle that we brought in a lot of official visitors during the month of April. And then, you know, June has always been the big thing for the last 5 years. And I think our hit rate in June has been above 80%. We do quality control that piece to it. And then as two Aprils ago, we didn't necessarily get those commitments until closer to signing day again. And so that was, when we look at it, like the guys we're bringing to campus, we got a fair shot. We're going to hit on them majority of the time.
I got one more, if that's all right.
Go ahead,
Robert, because I know you're chomping at the bit there.
Can we talk about it? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, basketball has, there's been, now it's been reported on and written about a number of the test. There's tests.
Yeah.
Is there something equivalent out there in the football space? Is it kind of unique to Illinois? How do you, you know, do your quality control on guys? And is there a standardized way of doing some quality control to make sure they end up tough, smart, dependable? And does that vary by position? And would Robert pass the test?
Ah. I didn't know.
He'd be a glue, guy in the locker room.
Yeah. Glue guy, absolutely. Yeah. The vibes guy, 100%.
Sportsmanship ward coming your way, my
right.
friend.
That's
and,
it.
And all
that's
the respect. Yeah, yeah. Right.
I think, so we do utilize personality testing, but it's hard because basketball, obviously, we see what they've done, and they're tremendous at what they do, and they probably value that a little bit more because there's fewer players that they target. There's fewer players that are on the court at a given time, on the team, all of that, right? I mean, we have 110 guys on our roster. And so
one miss in basketball could be a big problem in a locker room.
Exactly. But I think that there is personality testing that we utilize. However, when you have a head coach who's been in this business for over 30 years and going into his 18th season, like he's got something that there's a feel to it. Everybody's got a gut instinct, right, on somebody or something. And that's the coolest part about being in our building is that if there's something off, you communicate that, you verbalize that to whomever you're supposed to do that to, your direct supervisor, right? Or you walk into the head coach's office and say, Coach, there's something about this dude that I really like and I can't put my thumb on it. And then we all kind of dig into it. So is there's a process, like our number one goal objective is to always answer, like, does this guy love football? That's got to be the first overall question that needs to be answered in order to be the tough, smart, dependable player. And how do you go about finding that? That differs because you're going to in a different environment based on who you're recruiting, what position you're recruiting, what area you go into to find those players, right? Like, for instance, Gay Backus. Gay was committed to Tulane when we found him. But when we went to his high school in the fall during a bye week, the dude was in a 120-degree heat wrestling room with no windows, and he practiced for 2 hours. And I sweat my ass off. So, like,
yeah.
You know, like, there's – you could tell that this dude is built different. And then as you got to know the family and you got to know what makes him tick, like, you understood that his level, his love for competition, his love for football is ultra high, and it's on the same level as what our head coaches is. And so when you find like-minded people, you sort of gravitate towards them. And I think that's just – you know, it's going to be a rule to the end of time. Like-minded people like to be around like-minded people.
I've always said that to people asking about football recruiting. It's like, well, what's the part we don't see? And it's like, you guys have no idea how you're looking at stars and offers, and like, these are the good players in those. And staffs are looking at the person, at the student, at the, like you just said, drive. Do they want to play football? All that kind of stuff. You know, with offensive linemen, you're looking at, like, how far along are they in their body development and what, you know, I've told this story before of a former offensive lineman's dad telling me about how coaches would walk in and rub their son's cheek to see how much he was shaving because that would tell them how much more development or at he's getting, you know, yep. It's like cattle in some ways, yeah. Kind of thing, you know, yeah. Like, and everybody is just looking at like, oh, he had a Michigan Ohio State offer, so this is a good player, and this guy was only Illinois State or this, so obviously Malik Turner has nothing. No, Malik Turner is wanted by 20 programs and this type of thing. So all of that said, how do you as a staff now and a much larger recruiting staff look at the whole player? Find that guy who really wants to play, find that guy who has a drive. You know, what's the process to get there?
So I think you always want to start with parameters of just height, weight, speed, right? That's where you want to start with. And then
I'm out. I'm done. It's over.
Yep.
Gosh, my dreams are dashed, but continue.
So that's, you know, that's the first objective. And then from there, we go into where our recruiting territories, areas, our hotbeds, that type of stuff. And so you apply those parameters to this state, obviously, to the Midwest, to Texas, to Florida, right? And just, I mean, this is probably how, I mean, this is the only Division I school I've been to. So sure, I can't sure. say this yes. how everybody does, but I assume it's like this, right?
Sure.
And from there, there's thousands of websites that, you know, want you to subscribe to their service, that they go out and they find players or they partner up with a camp and they get these numbers. Well, there's a couple ones that we use that we trust that I think that do a really good job and have a broad number of high school prospects or junior college prospects within their database. And that's where you start. Like, that's if you're saying, okay, teach me, where should I start? Here's the websites. Here's the passwords. Go log in, pull up these lists. And then from there, you sort them by position, you sort them by heights, and that's like ground level,
yeah.
Day one, okay, we're building our 2029 class. This is how we're going to start it. Let's evaluate every single kid on this list. And so going back to a question you asked previously, like, there's I don't want to use this because it'll be used against me probably by my staff, but like, there's so much wasted, what people would think is wasted film watching, because you watch a lot, like, you know, there's 5,000 plus kids in the portal. We got eyes on 95% of those guys, right? And so you're watching all these players. In a given year, you might watch 7,000 players total. Not one person, but as a staff, like, you might watch that many players. But you're only going to sign, we bring in 45 this year, 41 this year. So, like, that scale is yes. so different.
Yes, I could do that math.
You know, and so that's where but the ground level, you're going to start by – huge picture and then start narrowing down, okay, this person, like, what do we like about him? Does this person fit our parameters? Does he fit the height, weight, speed? If he doesn't fit, what's the exception? Like, he's shorter, but he's really fast, really quick. So you try not to have too many exceptions every class, but there's always going to be an exception. I remember going to Hutch Junior College when we offered Daniel Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And Coach B walking back me and like, that's the guy. Like, we went for a left tackle that went to the SEC. We walked out of that practice, and DB wasn't even on the radar because I'm like, man, this dude is twitchy, he's athletic, but he was a little bit shorter.
Mm-hmm.
He had extremely long arms, right? And when we got back together, Coach was like, that's who I want from Hutch this year, mm-hmm. was Daniel Brown. So he fit the exception of, like, he doesn't match the parameter for the time being an outside linebacker in the old scheme to that, but he was extremely athletic, extremely burst, all that stuff. And so there's always going to be a few exceptions every year, but you start with the big list and narrow down.
Let me put this on a specific player. So you got Daryl Prater from Jacksonville State. When he did his media thing, extremely impressive kid, walked into the room, looked every reporter in the eye, hi, I'm Daryl, shook everyone's hand. You know, a mama raised him right kind of a kid.
Yep.
Great answers, great thoughts. So I'm sure when you're recruiting, you're looking at, okay, who are the FCS guys in the portal? I guess Jacksonville State moved up now, didn't they, or something?
Yeah.
So, yes. So, you know, played some of his career FCS, but some FBS. But you're looking at this, and he's checking these boxes. How does that part get developed? Is it just in person? Is it on the visit? Is it going out to visit these players? Like, how do you know, like, oh, this is a sharp kid,
yeah,
who's going to pick up the defense fast, and he's really wants to, you know, you were talking about the desire to, yeah, play football. Yeah. How do you develop that part of it?
Yeah, the transfer portal window, that makes it extremely hard because you can't contact these kids before they get in the portal, right? And so you're basing your instinct, your judgment on very minimal interactions before they come to campus. We didn't get to him first. We brought him on an official visit first.
Mm-hmm.
And within that, it's really the position coach, right? So D-line coach, Coach Jamo at the time, mm-hmm. being able to sit down and really get to know who the person is. Our strength coach, Coach Tank, getting to know, because college football, they spend the majority of their time with their strength coach. So Tank plays a huge part in our recruiting process because he can find out, like, in the fourth quarter when it's the end of game, there's a minute 30 left, does this dude have it in him to rise above it?
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's more of a gut feeling type deal. And so with Daryl, when he got to campus, I think after every kid leaves, especially in the portal season, there was, what'd you think of him? What were your red flags on him? What'd you like about it? And you kind of just hold all of that and give that knowledge, that, sure, info to coach, right? And mm-hmm. and ultimately let him be a decider of, like, yes, I want let's go harder on this guy, or, you know, we can talk about increasing rev share for it.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, that's part of it now, yeah.
And so that was with Daryl. But I think what really sold us with Daryl, because you got to think, these kids are getting blown up by hundreds of schools, hundreds of different staff members. Like, what separated us is just going the extra mile, doing more than what others do. And that's the motto of our building, was when we went to his home, when we flew down there to go see him, that to me allowed the parents to say, okay, these guys up here at Illinois are genuine people. Like, nobody else came to see me at my home, so we can trust them. So when when somebody trusts you, they let their guard down, but they let you connect with them deeper, right? And so that was really cool, because I think when we left that visit, it was we got this kid. Mm-hmm. And he didn't commit to us right then and there, sure, but, like, it was, we got this kid because he trusts us. He knows that this is the best place for him. We might not be offering him the most money like others, but because that trust was developed by us making that extra effort, going the extra mile, that's how you know we're going to get his best.
Yeah,
I would, just having worked a number of jobs in my life in various capacities, you know, I don't know how much young people value it yet, but hopefully you would take even less money knowing the environment, the care factor, the development. Am I gonna be around people I like and that who like me?
Yeah,
I think that would weigh heavily, because you can't always put a price tag on that.
It should. It always should. And the ones that don't view it that way, then they likely wouldn't survive in our building. Then they're not the TSD you know, DNA that we need, right? You know, if somebody is in it, somebody comes from nothing, I understand where their main goal is to improve their home life. Like, there's still ways to work around. At the end of the day, recruiting, even with a lot of money involved, like, recruiting still comes down to relationships.
Mm-hmm.
We've still got high school kids to 22-year-olds that we're still developing, and it's just a matter of how can we tap into them that they trust us. And you got to do it in such a short amount of time, especially in the transfer portal window. But to your point, if somebody's all about the money, then they're likely not a fit for us.
Yeah,
I'm going to put you on the spot here. You know, in 14 years, you've been a part of a lot of recruiting celebrations, a lot of we landed him, he said yes. I mean, you're in the dating game kind of thing all the time, you know. So he's like, she agreed to go to prom is like, you know, 20 times a year for you kind of thing.
Yeah.
What is the... we landed him, you know, what player would fall on the biggest celebration of, we know we just changed this program with this kid? And I know that's tough questions because you're going, you've got Beckman, Cubitt, Lovey, and Bielma across all these years.
Yeah.
But what sticks out to you as the, like, high fives around the office?
I will go... what's crazy is that when you were like, I need a roster to look at it.
Some sure.
Like, yeah. I know everybody.
I've got it in front of me. Yes. Yeah.
But I think you go back to the first one that I could probably remember is Keyshawn Vaughn.
Yes.
Running back, right?
Yes.
Like that was
huge.
A win. That
four-star
was
running back on signing day,
yep.
Considering other teams, had taken other visits. Yeah.
And his visit was awesome. And you know, remember when he said yes and we were like, holy shit.
Yes.
This is like,
yes.
Keyshawn doesn't come to Illinois.
No,
that's
not
most
at all.
Players like that didn't at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And that one was fun.
Yeah.
It was really fun. And then, you know, I think Lovey's first class, we had a few big wins, especially in the Chicagoland area. Ricky Smallin was a big one.
Yeah.
But those happened a little bit. They weren't around signing day, I guess. Those
sure.
happened a little bit earlier, and
yeah.
we kind of had felt that we were going to get this.
Do you learn to... as we were talking earlier about hits and misses, do you learn there's certain guys that have come in with a lot of hype? I'm thinking mainly out of the high school ranks. And maybe because they're known out of Chicago or, you know, they have whatever connections. But there's certain guys that, like, this could be, and for whatever reason, they don't pan out. But then there's somebody else that maybe we on the outside didn't talk about as much, but pans out. Are there guys that kind of emerge later that you're like, or was it like, no, I knew that. I knew that was coming. It's just the outside world didn't know that.
When they're good players, you're always going to get, yeah, we always knew he was going to be.
Yeah, 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 yeah,
yeah. Everybody's going to say, I scouted that guy first. Yeah, right, right?
Yeah.
You know, do you learn to, I understand there's hype, but I'm going to temper my, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yep, yeah, for sure. You have to. But I also think that the experiences of being where you had to recruit, that you weren't the sexiest person, especially, you know, college in the state at the time, like, you had to find under the radar, right? Diamonds in the roughs, whatever that you,
sure.
whatever fans want to call it.
Yeah.
And so I think being able to learn that early in my career was like, okay, this is, you don't necessarily, I guess we leave no stone unturned, but you're not setting out like on June 1st saying, okay, we're going to go find everybody that doesn't have any offers. That's not how it goes. However, when you find that player, you're like, okay, this dude's got, he has the measurables. He's got the body that we think it could grow into this. He's got the right mindset. So when he does become a good player now, you're not surprised by it. Because you got to trust your instinct, trust your gut, trust your evaluation. So, but I learned that over the course of not being able to recruit, you know, quote unquote, 4 or 5 star kids, to always trying to find the under the radar guys, to now, like, that's just a part of our process. And fans may know it, may not know it, like, that we're always going to do that just because your kids' bodies grow. I mean, people go through puberty, they mature differently. A lot of biggest growths happen between your junior to senior year in high school. And, you know, I was a 5'8 sophomore. By the time I was a senior, I was 6'1. And so I hit a huge 3-inch growth spurt at some point in that that sophomore to junior year, and then another one junior senior year. So that's always
mine's coming.
Going to happen.
I'm kind of late on. I'm behind the curve. Yeah. But mine's coming.
I'm going wider now, but it's always going to happen.
Yeah. Last question I have for you. You and I have engaged in two flying chest bumps. One after the Citrus Bowl, in the hallway outside the locker room, I believe. And the one at the Music City Bowl was on the field. I'm wearing my press pass, doing flying chest bumps with staffers, which really doesn't follow the media creel. But anyway, which was your favorite? Have I injured you in any way? Which did you prefer of the two? Robert literally running towards you, pointing at his chest, flying through the air and making impact.
I think the man did play football.
That's a good point.
The first one, Citrus Bowl, was the one that was the most enjoyable.
Yes.
The second, you know, Music City one, because we have done it before.
That's a good
point.
I'm
not saying there was an expectation, but
yes,
you know.
Yes. But, yeah, you never forget your first flying chest bump from Robert.
But
yes.
The adrenaline on both of the win, every win you have that.
But the moment at the Citrus was like, that just happened.
Yeah.
I've told people so many times, like, as a fan experience, I'm not sure I'm ever going to match that game.
Yeah.
Just the way it ratcheted up in the fourth quarter.
Oh, man.
Both stands, the hair, everybody's like the hair on the back of the neck standing up. Illini fans want to be out there in the field when the little scuffle's going. South Carolina fans across the field are yelling even louder. And it's just like, you know, into that, Josh McCray goes 60 yards. And it was just this perfect, perfect moment.
I mean, I got chills right now.
Ah, like, yes. I'm going to go home and watch it.
I mean, whenever we have visitors or official visits, we always have games that are running on loop on our TVs. And, you know, that's one of them. It's a huge win for our program.
Absolutely.
And when I look at it, I'm always like, damn, do I look like this on the sideline? Like, I mean, my wife makes fun of me all the time. Like, the way I was chewing gum in the fourth quarter, like, the heart rate was so freaking high.
Sure,
yes. It was awesome. Like, you wanted to run across, and the scene when Coach is walking back from the field, and you got everybody kind of at our hash at that point, like, ready to lock in arms.
Yes,
I mean,
absolutely.
That's when you're ready to roll.
It was a great moment. Yes.
Pat Ableton, you and your staff have assembled the 21st ranked or 22nd ranked, depending on where you're looking, recruiting class for this incoming season, and a lot of transfers, a lot of new faces. It's been hours and hours of a labor of love. And congratulations on what has been accomplished and for you over this 13 going on 14 year career, and as well as what's to come this year. And we really thank you for being our guest.
I appreciate y'all. I thank you for giving us the platform to be able to talk about this, and it's awesome. It is. I mean, I'm a fan, just like anybody else is when it comes to our media, or local media especially, because it's we share a bond. So I appreciate y'all for having me.
All right. Thanks, Pat.
We'll come back and open up the mailbag on Light the Eye. Light the Eye is brought to you in part by Logic Coworking. At the corner of St. Mary's and Neal's in Champaign, Logic Coworking is your ideal workspace in a bright and welcoming environment. There's day passes offered for you who just need a place to get away to focus on a project or a task in a distraction-free environment. Or members can enjoy 24-hour, 7-day-a-week access to the best-in-class amenities. You can focus in a workspace designed for you to inspire, connect, and support. They offer even, for those who need more permanent office space, offices to rent, or there's also conference rooms that you can use on a reservation basis to work on a group task. Plus, there's phone booths where you can slip away and have a conversation. There's even a kitchen, locker rooms, and showers. Whatever you need, Logic Coworking is there for you to be productive. Give them a try and you can join, no strings attached. Enjoy a spacious open-air work environment with open desk memberships offering you premium flexibility. Logic Coworking in Champaign at the corner of St. Mary's and Neal. All right, more to our mailbag. And Daniel asks us to wrap up and grade the year as a whole across all sports. We've got another episode coming down the line here where we're going to look at the year in review. So do you want to save?
Yes, this? I think we save that. I think that one becomes its own whole episode. Like, I think that's a good... That's a good, like, let's take stock of everything in June kind of a thing of let's talk about where everything ended up and the expectations and all of it. So yeah, I think that's a good whole episode one.
Okay, but B plus, A minus?
I mean, with a Final Four, a 9-win football season, women winning a tournament game, yeah, it can't go. It can't dip below. I guess no Big Ten titles, maybe B plus. I'll give it a B plus since we didn't technically win a single golf tournament.
When you were in school, what was the cutoff from A to B?
I mean, I don't think it was 90, 80, 70, 60. It was like 92, 85, 84, something like that. So we're gonna go with a 91 here.
Yeah, I can go with that.
Yeah.
See, we just answered the question. We don't have to do the episode.
Okay.
Well, hey, it was a really good year for a lot of sports. Most of them. It wasn't perfect. There we go. We just covered the year.
There we go.
Illini Anchorman, mm-hmm. I like this. Mm-hmm. What should be done to build upon the recent momentum of fan support for football season? Student involvement, tailgating, season ticket sales, etc. I don't have an immediate... I'm not walking... You walk through the fan experience more mm-hmm. on home games than I do, so I don't mm-hmm. have a lot of hardcore opinions on it. I mean, if you could snap your finger and money was no object, you know, the South End Zone.
Yes.
And,
yes.
And you know, making Memorial Stadium even better.
I would agree. I think this massive scoreboard is probably an opportunity.
Is it big?
Have you driven down Kirby? I think this massive scoreboard is an opportunity to do some things, right? Like, there's no... Look, famously, the one tradition Illinois had went away in 2007. So while Purdue has their big dumb drum, and isn't that what it's called? The big dumb drum? It's not?
I think it's the world's largest.
Oh. You sure it's not the big, stupid, idiotic drum? Okay, maybe not. You know, everybody has their things. You know, Iowa developed the wave. What, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, whatever, when the children's hospital wing was built and it was taller than the stadium and they came up. This is an opportunity for Illinois to do some things, right? With a new environment. And look, there's like for any night game, there's new lighting throughout the stadium as part of this whole thing. They have the ability to do that, like make the whole thing glow orange and then, you know, the lights are kind of cycling and flashing after a touchdown and that kind of thing. So would say in-stadium environment.
Yeah. What if, like, the Alumni Association put this big banner on the field, and when the team runs out on the field, they all jump up and touch the banner?
Yes. I go club supports you? No? Is that the M Club? Yes. The I Club supports you. How about there's a sign on the stairway that everybody taps that says, play like a champion today or whatever.
Oh, it says. Fans get to do that too?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's just the thing. We're just lacking in tradition because things changed. So I would like to see the inside. Like, look, I can only speak for Lot 31. Never been better. Like, tailgating scene right now, the last 2 years, is the best tailgating scene of my lifetime. I did not tailgate in the 80s. I was 13. I was 8 years old. I was 10 during the 83 season. I was not part of that scene. So this is the best tailgating scene of my lifetime. I think it's great out there. A plus, don't change a thing. Inside the stadium, we need to get some stuff going that makes it a little more of a better game day experience.
Yeah, I think the biggest improvements you think about would be big facility improvements that would require years.
Yes.
Yes. The only thing I could add would be students need to be closer to the field.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to see that. Look, they built the north end zone with only two single staircases so that students couldn't get near the field, so they couldn't jump down and over and run to the field, but it hasn't stopped people of late from getting on the field. So Yeah, there's a lot of big time. Yes, we need to get the stands closer to the sidelines and all that stuff. That's in the future. For now, how can we build on this recent support? The game day experience, I am hoping, improves, because that's, you go to other stadiums and you go to Champaign, and the during the game, the 3-hour experience is just a little lacking in Illinois, so we got to figure something out.
Last one. What order do you think the following events will happen? Football in the college football playoff, a men's basketball title, a golf title, and a women's basketball Final Four. This That's is from a
fantastic question.
He was a high school quarterback, so
I'm guessing he was a high school quarterback.
I guess that's what they're saying.
Go ahead.
Okay, on the count of three, both say what we think is going to go first. Okay, one, two. Hang on. Go to the wide shot. One, two, three.
Men's title. Basketball title.
Yes, we agree. That could happen first. Okay, mm-hmm. On the count of three, say what will happen second. One, two, three.
Golf
football
title.
College football playoff.
I have golf title, too. Champaign is title town. Yeah, there. Let's go on the record. Let's go on the record so I can just pull this clip later. It'll either die and no one would ever see it or remember it, or I could pull it out 4 years from now. What if we win a basketball title and a golf title before 2030? Huh? I think it's going to happen.
We choose to do it not because it's easy, but because it is hard.
Say chowda. Sorry. I got my wrong Boston.
Okay. Here's why.
I go Mayor Quimby after you go JFK.
Chowda. Here's why I think a football in the playoff would happen before a golf title.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is not a slight. It's not a slight. 24 teams can make the playoff.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Winning the match play is really, 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 really hard. Even if, as Illinois has already demonstrated, you are the best team.
Given that logic, we should have said playoff, right?
That's what I said.
We should have led with playoff first over basketball.
Okay, but I'm also factoring that there's a chance Illinois basketball could be really good again.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Yes. And then, of course,
it would have to go to 24. That would change the math, too.
So that makes golf title number three.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes women's basketball in the Final Four fourth.
Mm-hmm.
But I would not be surprised.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Here's why I have it fourth. I have it fourth because it's a sport that's so condensed at the top.
Yes.
Elite Eight, I'll absolutely believe it. I might put Elite Eight for women's basketball that. Then you got to beat UConn or you got to beat South Carolina. Like, it's really hard to get that, especially in that sport, to get over that final hump. Those great teams consolidate all the talent into those teams, and it's really, really hard. So, yeah. But I'll believe it. I think they could get the Elite Eight next year.
We will possibly get to some more questions if we have time in future episodes. We'll also look at the year in review coming up, but that's going to do it for this one. Thanks to our guest, Pat Embleton, the general manager of Illinois football. Thanks to our hosts here at the Center for Teaching and Innovation in Learning. For Robert Rosenthal, I'm Scott Beatty. We'll talk to you again the next time when we light the eye.